Welcome to the LDS Military Members Podcast. This podcast was created for military members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, their families, and those who support them. We welcome all who want to drop in for a listen, and we hope you enjoy the stories, advice, helps, and tips that this community offers. Hello and welcome to the LDS Military Members Podcast. This podcast was created for military members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, their families, and those who support them. We welcome all who want to drop in for a listen, and we hope you enjoy the stories, history, tips, and advice that this community offers. Since this is the first episode, I thought it fitting to walk through some of the military service as it relates to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and we'll start at the beginning. So military service has been a part of the church since its early beginning. December 16th and 17th of 1833, Joseph Smith had received some revelation on what to do about the saints in Clay County, Missouri, who had been pushed from their homes through persecution. Now this is section 101 of the Doctrine and Covenants, and this kind of starts the ball rolling because they had been persecuted, they had been pushed off their lands, and Joseph Smith really wanted to know what to do. And initially the response he got was he was instructed to take their grievances to the governor, and if it wasn't satisfied there, then he should go to the president. So the first channel to address this was going through the lawful channel, right? And in section 101, God assures him that the Constitution was established by the Lord and we should act in accordance to its precepts. Well, Joseph never stopped pursuing this avenue. He constantly petitioned governors and even president to help, but almost never got the results that he was seeking. So just to give some context as well on how early we're talking, section 102 is the organization of the First High Council, and that was on February 17th, 1834. So this was happening very early in the history of the church. And shortly after that, section 103 was received on February 24th, and this is really where we start. Section 103 guided the formation of what would be known as Zion's Camp. It outlines the requirements for 500 men to go and help the saints reclaim the lands they had rightfully purchased. And in the event they couldn't get 500 men, they should get 300 men. And if in the event they couldn't get 300 men, they needed 100 men. But they had to have at least 100 men enlisted in the help of Zion before they could go. And so this is really the first call to military service by church members. And this was done within the church itself. But it took some time, but by May, Joseph Smith set out as commander-in-chief of the newly formed Zion's Camp on the 1,000-mile march. And this march, just to put it in context for those who if you're from this part of the country, they started in just south of Cleveland, Ohio, and marched down to just around Dayton, and then started across. And they crossed through Indianapolis, Indiana, Springfield, Illinois, over the Mississippi River, and then on to Liberty, Missouri, which is on the western side. So it was pretty far. It's four states really that they marched across. It was a long march. And for everyone who's not familiar maybe with this part of the country, maybe you're out from Utah. So that would be like if you start in Salt Lake City and you marched south down I-15, San Diego would get you approximately 800 miles. So you'd still have 100 or 200 miles to go. So pretty far. And then if you're not familiar with this part of the country or Utah and you're an East Coaster, Google Maps tells us that New York City to Orlando, Florida is just over 1,000 miles. And you'd also have to pay $50 in tolls if you march that one. But it's far, right? New York City to Orlando, Florida. So this wasn't a short little summer camp. This was a long, hard march. And in a lot of ways, the conditions of the camp remind me of Washington's army during the Revolutionary War. And they were obviously hungry. They were tired. They were often sick, blistered feet, constantly wondering what was going to happen, what awaited them. And although it's not in the wintertime, and the summers can get quite hot. We're not necessarily the humidity levels of the South, but it does get pretty humid at times. And this was in June, July when it's hot. So it wasn't a fun journey for the members of Zion's Camp. But the promise of Zion's Camp are actually some of the promises that we still can receive today. And that is, if we serve righteously, we can receive protection and peace in knowing that whatever happens, ourselves and our family will be blessed. And the blessings are numerous, right? I'm sure a lot of people who have had the opportunity to be part of the military have seen many of those blessings as long as we serve righteously. So once Zion's Camp finally reached their destination after this long, hard march, there was really no big military engagement, no action, no fighting. They had packed their gear, their rifles, and even some of the women and children had accompanied them on this really hard, arduous journey, and to get to the end, and there's no real clear-cut solution. So there was some concessions made on the part of the church, on the part of the mobs, we can call them, but there was no real clear-cut solution. And that was very unagreeable, to say the least, with some of the members of Zion's Camp who had made this long trek. And the result was that a few of them actually went so far as to apostatize and leave the church. But the upside was that many of the early church leaders were proven during the march of Zion's Camp. In fact, we know two recognizable names as Wilford Woodruff and Brigham Young, both were part of Zion's Camp. And Brigham Young commented later that some of the skills he obtained and the things he learned on that early march equipped him for the much larger migration west when he had to lead the saints again in a very long and hard journey. The camp, Zion's Camp, ultimately was disbanded and the men were discharged of their duty. And some men stayed in Missouri, others returned home. And then people like Wilford Woodruff, he stayed in the area and then served a mission from there. So I couldn't really find a whole lot on the return trip. I'm sure if you dig into some of the journals and stuff that was recorded at the time, you could find more information, but I can imagine it was just as difficult, especially in some regards, because now you weren't a disciplined military unit with everybody pulling their weight and helping and having assigned jobs. So it was more of a get yourself home. But I'm sure if you're like me, maybe it was a little better because I like traveling alone. I don't like to rely on other people or wait for other people to get their bags or go through security or whatnot. So the point is, I can't really find too much on it. However, I'm sure that there was just as many difficulties returning as there was making their way out. So that was Zion's Camp. That was the first real military service in the church, and that was all done within the confines of the church. Now we move on to the second recognized military service in the church, and that is the Nauvoo Legion. Now, the Nauvoo Legion was the first official U.S. government recognized and uniformed military body of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. On December 6, 1840, the charter for the city of Nauvoo, Illinois, filed by Joseph Smith and the Latter-day Saints, was approved by then-Illinois Governor Thomas Carlin and the Illinois legislature that included future President Abraham Lincoln. And that charter also granted the city of Nauvoo the ability to form a militia that would fall under the authority of Governor of Illinois. So it was a civilian-led militia. In other words, the militia fell under control of a civilian leader. the governor. So the governor didn't really care too much how the militia was formed, as long as it was controllable and it met the guidelines set out by the state. And one of the interesting things I found was that upon forming the militia, Joseph Smith must have been inspired, because he took command of the newly formed militia as a lieutenant general. And at first I was thinking, wow, he took himself a rank that was actually higher than all other militia commanders. And at first glance, it seems kind of arrogant, but the real reason was something I never would have thought of. And as it turns out, as long as he outranked the other militia commanders, it would be illegal for them to try and court-martial him. And this proved extremely important, since the church, and Joseph specifically, was being targeted and persecuted by everyone outside of the church. So this gave him protection as a military commander from other militia commanders at that time. So there he was, Lieutenant General Joseph Smith. And if you have the time, I recommend pulling up the church history, pulling up the church website, and finding the history section. There's actually some photos that they put on here. But there he was, Joseph Smith, standing at the front of the formation, tall, very tall for his time, standing 6'2", long blue woolen jacket, shiny epaulets on his broad shoulders, with white breeches offset by tall black leather boots. And atop his head, he wore a naval-style cap, think kind of Napoleon-esque. And it had black plumes, and he had a polished scabbard hanging to his left side. So very regal-looking Joseph Smith. And you can just imagine the imagery that comes from that. Very commanding, humble, courageous leader standing at the head of the newly formed militia. And at the time, all men ages 18 and 44, or 18 to 44, were required to serve in the militia. So some estimates using different muster logs placed active service numbers as high as 2,500 in the Nauvoo Legion. So put it in context, the standing army of the United States around this time was about 8,500 troops. And the Nauvoo Legion was up to 2,500. So very sizable militia compared to everything else that was going on at the time. And it was the largest militia in the state of Illinois for sure, and probably some of the surrounding states as well. So the militia drilled often, and the military parade drew people from all around to come and watch. And if any of you have seen military ceremonies, been to ceremonies where drill played a major part, you know how impressive military drill can be. Think to basic training graduations, where different flights, squadrons, groups are marching along the parade route, dressed in their military uniforms, their dress uniforms, everybody in step, everybody practiced and polished. It really is a sight to see. It's really very impressive, and it does something when you see it. It kind of invokes some emotion, because it's a very impressive sight. One of the things I keep coming back to while thinking about the militia and its numbers is how dedicated the prophet Joseph Smith was in following the Lord's counsel. At this time, he had up to 2,500 dedicated men at his disposal, and they were equipped with arms and uniforms. He had their loyalty. They were drilled. They were disciplined. They were the largest militia in the state of Illinois. But not only did Joseph Smith obey the directions given to him as a military commander who was subordinate to the civilian leaders above him, he did it while those very same people refused to help protect the members of his church from persecution. And his very, very inspired and loyal servant, Joseph Smith was. He was very humble, but at the same time, very courageous in everything he did. And having this large militia at his disposal, he still chose to take counsel from the Lord and act in accordance to the laws at the time. So the militia continued on, and it kind of came to, well, everything was kind of coming to a head, and the persecution grew stronger and stronger. And eventually there was a point where Joseph Smith, there was a printing press that was destroyed, and things were not going well in Nauvoo, to the point where Joseph Smith in June of 1844 declared martial law in the city of Nauvoo. There was so much unrest. But even still, he used his militia not to attack those that persecuted him or go after those people, but only to keep order in the city, to defend the city, but he kept them from engaging in military action. So he still showed tremendous constraint even when they were being persecuted on all sides, and they rightfully had justification against their persecutors. But then obviously we go on to the culmination being when he was arrested, taken to jail, and eventually murdered. And even through those times, even though Joseph Smith had all these armed men at his disposal, he chose to heed the Lord's counsel because the Lord had things that needed to happen, and Joseph Smith was willing to allow those things to happen. But for 3 years, the Nauvoo militia was active in Nauvoo. And just imagining standing on the bluff where the temple is now, it sits overlooking the city below. They had their shops, their blacksmith shop. If you've ever been in Nauvoo, it's a really beautiful area. And they have it laid out in similar form to how it was. There's still quite a few buildings there. And so you can kind of get an idea what it would be like if you're standing on the bluff where the temple sits now, overlooking the city of Nauvoo. Lots of people, very bustling, busy place, and then seeing the militia drilling, marching around and shouting commands. It must have been a very, very beautiful and patriotic and uplifting sight to see. Not only that, but for a short time, this must have been absolute paradise to the saints that lived in Nauvoo. All their hard work, building a place of their own. Their militia was backed by the governor and state legislature, so it was legitimate. They had legitimacy to the things they were doing. And a temple was being built overlooking that city of Nauvoo. The prophet himself remarked, "We felt proud to be associated with a body of men which, in point of discipline, uniform, appearance, and knowledge of military tactics, are the pride of Illinois, one of its strongest defenses, and a great bulwark of the Western country." So it obviously shows not only where the people of Nauvoo must have been happy, but the prophet himself was very pleased with how things were going. He felt that serving the country, being part of a militia that protected the homeland, so to speak, he felt a lot of joy, and he got a lot of comfort in seeing the city of Nauvoo as it was. The Nauvoo Legion was the first military service that was actually recognized by the United States government in some way. Zion's Camp being organized within the church, and then the Nauvoo Legion being organized in the church, but being a larger part of the country's defenses or the state of Illinois' defenses. So we can see the church service goes right along with, or military service goes right along with the church as it was growing and progressing. Military service has always been an important part of that. So I want to leave with this because I think it's very fitting. It's another quote, and it's on his role as Lieutenant General, Joseph Smith stated, "As to the military station I hold and the cause of my holding it, it is as follows. When we came here, the state required us to bear arms and do military duty according to law. I then told the saints that though I was clear from military duty by law in consequence of lameness in one of my legs, yet I would set them the example and would do duty myself. They then said that they were willing to do duty if they could be formed into an independent company and I could be at their head. This is the origin of the Nauvoo Legion, and of my holding the office of Lieutenant General. All the power that I desire or have sought to obtain has been the enjoyment of the constitutional privilege for which my fathers shed their blood, of living in peace in the society of my wife and children and enjoying the society of my friends, and that religious liberty which is the right of every American citizen, of worshiping according to the dictates of his conscience and the revelations of God. This is very fitting for everybody who is listening or who's a member of our group. Whether you serve or whether you support someone who does, military service is tied to church service in everything we do. As long as we do it righteously and with good intentions, we will receive the blessings that are promised to us. So I want to thank everybody who's joined us. This is it for episode one. Again, this podcast is for the group, and I am sure you all have great advice and stories to share. So if you want to come on the show or know someone you would like to hear from, please let us know. Shoot us an email at lds.militarymembers@gmail.com. In the meantime, stay safe and thank you for your service. That's it for this episode. Thank you all for joining us. And if you want to come on the show or know someone you would like to hear from, please shoot us an email at lds.militarymembers@gmail.com. So until next time, stay safe and thank you for your service.